It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Dublina Chakraborty.
And I'm Sarah Dowdy.
And the news of Ned Kelly's now identified remains has us all excited about bush rangers again. And that's mostly because our listeners are so fired up about it. When the news of his remains being identified came out, as we mentioned in the first part to this podcast, we got emails from all over the world.
Our inboxes exploded with Ned Kelly subject lines.
Indeed. So last time we started out by talking about Ned's remains being found and the news about that, but we also talked about guys who weren't Ned, the earliest bushrangers in Australia who laid the foundation for later gangs like the Kelly Gang. And these men were mostly convict bolters, which means they were transported felons who escaped prison or the settlements and turned to a life of crime. But in 1853, the British Parliament passed the Penal Servitude Act, which ended most transportation sentences. And after that, the typical bushranger went from being a foreign-born convict to being a native-born Australian, complete with a thorough knowledge of the land.
And that's pretty important. But another thing that's important is to figure out the motivation for this new generation of bushrangers, since they weren't just already convicted criminals. There were really a few things at play, and the first one was gold. So the discovery of gold in Australia, specifically in Victoria and New South Wales, was a really big motivator of bushrangers in the 1850s. It gave them access to great wealth that they could convert to cash really pretty easily, and it helped that the gold fields were easy to bail up. Essentially, they were isolated and the police were often neglecting their duties. Many were jumping ship to join the gold rush themselves. And because gold had to be shipped across these lonesome long stretches of territory, they were really the perfect target for ambushes. But there was another factor at play too, besides just gold, which seems pretty obvious.
Yeah, it was land. So while the Aborigines had probably one of the most peaceful attitudes toward land holding that you can imagine, things changed dramatically when the first European settlers arrived. And by the time the period we're discussing rolled around, a real beef had developed between the two subgroups of white Australians who were rural, and that was the rich squatters on one side and poor selectors on the other. So just a little background on that. So initially, squatters in Australian history were just like squatters anywhere else. They were illegal occupiers of land, in this case, grazing land outside of the legitimate crown settlements. But by the 1840s, it was clear that squatters were developing the country's wool industry and becoming a political force of their own. They were allowed leases at that point, and many grew very, very rich.
But we end up with an influx of new immigrants and miners who are arriving every day. And finally, the colonies started to pass selection acts so that these newer arrivals could buy some land themselves at auction. And they were, of course, competing against the powerful squatters. So it's really no surprise that these two groups of people didn't much care for each other. They had conflicting interests. So our first bushranger, though, now that we've established the motives for this later generation, we're going to start with a bushranger who really epitomized the later generation, even though he was a compatriot of Frank Gardner, who was the last ranger we included on our earlier list.
Yeah, his name was Brave Ben Hall, or just Ben Hall, but they call him Brave Ben Hall, and he knew the countryside really well. He knew horses, and he was Australian-born. He was born May 9th, 1837, in New South Wales, and he was the son of two ex-convicts. His father actually met his mother when she was at the female convict factory.
Well, and I like starting with him, too, because he is really, truly the second generation here, the son of convicts. How perfect.
Exactly. And he grew up working with horses and cattle while his father ran a successful farm and worked as an overseer. And Ben, the interesting thing about him, though, is even though he was the child of two convicts, he seemed initially on track for this kind of hardworking agricultural life, the same life that his parents were leading at the time, basically.
Or that they were at least cultivating.
Right. He took on a lease on land in Sandy Creek, and he married his neighbor, Bridget Walsh, on Leap Day in 1856 in a Catholic ceremony. But then, just like a Western movie, poor treatment in the hands of the law is what made him abandon this peaceful life.
Or at least that's what we think. Evidence about this part of his life is a little bit sketchy, but there are two wrongful arrests, and the first occurs April 1862 on the orders of Sir Frederick Pottinger, and the charges were armed robbery and being an accomplice to none other than bushranger Frank Gardner, not a guy who you want to be associated with if you're on the right side of the law. So Ben Hall spent several weeks in jail, but there was really no evidence, and he was let go. Then comes another arrest, this time for a gold robbery. And again, there was no evidence. It didn't even go to trial. And he comes back home and finds that his house has been burned down. And perhaps Pottinger did it. His stock is dead from thirst. And because of legal expenses, he has to give up his lease. So he's suddenly a ruined man.
Yeah, and to make matters worse, at some point in the middle of all this trouble, his wife left with their infant son, maybe for a former policeman. So 22-year-old Hall at this point teams up with Frank Gardner for real and starts robbing the countryside. Their exploits were really in-your-face type tactics. They'd steal racehorses. In 1863, they bailed up the entire town of Canoundra, putting everybody up in a local hotel and treating them to a three-day feast and bender. The party was only cut short because they got word that the river was rising and they'd be trapped if they'd stay longer.
And one thing to note, too, about Ben Hall, even though they were really well-armed and really well-organized, Hall would stop members of his own gang from committing acts of violent revenge or cruelty if he could. He'd prefer a ransom over death, even though by 1864, a gang member had shot a sergeant, and by 1865, another member shot a constable. It's easy to see how violence would pretty quickly become the norm for these bushrangers. But the exploits of the gang and the ineptitude of the police force eventually caught higher-ups' attention, as you would expect them to. His old enemy, Hall's old enemy, Frederick Pottinger, was even recalled to Sydney in 1865 for neglecting his duty. He had been out riding in some races, and he didn't notice that Hall's gang was also right there. You'd think he'd recognize him.
Yeah, you'd think so. Maybe he was like wearing a different outfit,
a different
or
hat,
something, a disguise perhaps.
Some glasses.
I don't know. But that same year, things changed a little bit. The government put out a new law, the Felons Apprehension Act. So in addition to the gold and the land disputes we discussed, this is really the third piece of the puzzle for understanding later generations of bushrangers. Under the new rules, individuals could be proclaimed as outlaws and then shot without warning. So this was basically martial law. And anyone harboring a felon could be considered a felon as well. Pretty bad news for the bushrangers with Robin Hood-type reputations.
Yeah, because as we've discussed in the Ned Kelly episode and in our earlier bushrangers episode, these people really were indulged by townspeople sometimes. I mean, depending on how good or bad they were. I mean, I have to imagine some of it was fear. You don't want to insult the bushranger. But these three-day benders, the three-day feast, that sort of thing, townspeople like them to a certain extent. So with this new law and a 1,000-pound reward on his head, Hall decided that he was going to call it quits, but he was betrayed by a friend, and troopers showed up at his hiding place May 5th, 1865, shot him in the back, then shot him 30 more times. And that was pretty much the end of the notorious Hall gang. The last two members of his gang were also shot or executed within the next few months. But he did get some ballad immortality, though, courtesy of Hall's brother-in-law. And I'm going to force the rhymes here to make this work. Dargan he was chosen to shoot the outlaw dead. The troopers then fired madly, filled him full of lead. They rolled him in a blanket and strapped him to his prod and led him through the streets of Forbes to show the prize they had. Had. But, you know, we're going to make it work. So that was the end of Ben Hall. But we have another bushranger who's not such a cheery-sounding fellow.
No, he's not quite as likable. So first we should say that the notoriety of Ben Hall's gang and the ineptitude of the police are often credited as the reason behind the Felons Apprehension Act of 1865. But not all of the bushrangers of the 1860s were these Robin Hood-type characters hosting three-day parties. One in particular, Mad Dan Morgan, was known for meaningless murders, cruelty, and violence. Mad Dan, as he was called, was born John Fuller in New South Wales in 1830, and he was the illegitimate child of Mary Owen and George Fuller. And unlike Ben Hall, Dan Morgan, he didn't start out on the straight and narrow. Pretty much as early as his teens, he was suspected of stealing stock. But his actual arrest record began in 1854, when he was sentenced to 12 years of hard labor for a highway robbery in Victoria. He always claimed he was innocent of this original crime, though. That's the interesting point.
It was what made him a bitter man. So after 6 years, he was released on a ticket of leave for good behavior and didn't report back. He was on the lam. And from that point, he became known as Down the River Jack. And he started work as a horse breaker and a station hand. So maybe kind of getting into legitimate work, except that he got into bushrangering pretty fast when he stole the prize horse of the family he worked for. And one member of that family, Evan Evans, along with another squatter, tracked Jack back to his camp and badly hurt him, but he did manage to escape. And from then on, he changed his name yet again and became known as Daniel Morgan, Billy the Native. And this is when he really gets into serious bushrangering. He was tied to the bailing up of a police magistrate and to robberies across Northeast Victoria. He even gets a 200-pound reward put on his head, dead or alive.
And by the next year, in 1864, he drove up the price on his head considerably by shooting the overseer John McLean, and just a few days later, a police sergeant, too. So now there's a 1,000-pound reward on his head. And by September, another sergeant was killed, and Morgan claimed responsibility for that, too. So he just kept snowballing.
Escalating.
Morgan was quite different from some of the other rangers we've discussed. He usually worked alone, for example, or if he had accomplices, they'd change from job to job. So he didn't have one crew or gang that he worked with the entire time. He'd sometimes be remarkably cruel, too. He would force groups of Chinese workers to sing and dance before shooting one in the arm. He also forced the wife of a homesteader against a fire until her skirt caught fire. And after bailing up coaches, he'd stampede the horses and once tied squatter Isaac Vincent to a fence and then set fire to a nearby shed.
He's so not a very nice guy.
Very bad.
But he really, really hated squatters. And it's good that we gave that explanation so you know what squatters are and you're not just like, what do you have against squatters, illegal landholders, but he hated those who had bad reputations as employers, especially. And during raids, he'd pull these stunts that kind of sound like Robin Hood, but kind of bad too. Like Robin Hood with a dark twist. In one case, he made one squatter write more than 400 pounds worth of checks to his employees while he was bailing him up. And during another, he made the employer give food and drink to all of his employees. And his temper was really unpredictable too. It could shift on a dime, turning from courtly, that's how you'll often see it described, and considerate, to violent. And thus his name, Mad Dan, sometimes Mad Dog. And it's this element of his personality, that unpredictable temper, plus his 5'10" frame, his dark beard, and this very hooked bird-like nose that made people seriously afraid of him. And he worked on that fear. He would kill informants without question. I mean, that's probably part of the reason why he worked alone and switched up his partners so frequently. But he was a scary guy.
Eventually, though, his reputation did catch up with him. In the early months of 1865, Morgan pulled 6 major robberies before the passing of the Felons Apprehension Act. And the day that it did pass, April 8th, 1865, he committed his last crime.
I mean, what timing, right?
Exactly. He bailed up a homestead in Northeast Victoria. Pretty standard stuff for Morgan, right? But what he didn't know was that the co-owner of the station, a man named George Rutherford, lived really nearby. And a nurse at the station, Alice Keenan, managed to get word to Rutherford about what was going on, and he rounded up a posse of workers, local men, and police to wait for Morgan's appearance in the morning. So when Morgan emerged in the morning to steal a horse, he was shot in the back, and he died by that afternoon. But they didn't just bury him.
No, they didn't.
They cut his beard, skin and all, off of his face and sent his severed head to a Melbourne anatomy professor.
Yeah, the beard thing is usually described as being flayed off his face, which I think is so horrible. What a gross souvenir, but kind of a grisly end for Dan Morgan. Well, definitely a grisly end. But these bushrangers have obviously continued to capture the imagination of Australians and really people around the world. And we talked a little bit about Ned Kelly movies and spin-offs and things, but fortunately, there are spin-offs regarding other bushrangers, too. It's not all about Ned, as I hope we've proved with this podcast series.
Yeah, just an example of a few of the films that are out there about other bushrangers. There was a 1976 film called Mad Dog Morgan, starring Dennis Hopper.
He sounds like a really good Mad Dog Morgan.
Yeah, definitely. 1953, there was another movie called Captain Thunderbolt, made by Cecil Holmes. And there are several movie adaptations of the novel Robbery Under Arms by Rolf Boulder, and those feature bushranger Captain Starlight, whose real name, I believe, was Harry Redford. And finally, there's a movie called Ben Hall, Notorious Bushranger, which was made in 1911. And there were also Ben Hall TV shows. There was a series, I think, on Ben Hall in 1975, which was a collaboration between the BBC and the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. So those are just a few of the options that are out there if you want to see some other Bushranger movies. But there are so many, and I would invite all our listeners to send us some recommendations, because everyone was so good about sending us Ned Kelly movie recommendations.
I mean, I know. We heard all about the Heath Ledger Ned Kelly movie.
The 2003 one.
And the Mick Jagger one.
Mm-hmm, which everyone says you shouldn't see because it's so terrible.
Except a few people who said, well, you should just see it because, I mean,
because it's got Mick Jagger in it.
Yeah.
So definitely send us your favorites or your least favorites, just so we know what to avoid if we want to. And any other suggestions for Australia-related topics? We've done a lot of Australian history recently, so we might take a little break, but we're always looking for Australia-related topics to research.
It's been fun.
Yeah, it has. So you can email all those suggestions to us at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com, or if you want to just get to know us a little better over social media, talk to us about whatever's on your mind, history-wise or otherwise, we are on Twitter at Mistin History or on Facebook. We will see you there.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.